Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Susan and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, February 5th, 2026, and we are reading from the Big Book in the chapter There Is a Solution, page 18, the first paragraph, starting with an illness of this sort, ending with anyone can increase the list. Today's readers are Vanessa G., who will read the text, Shelley E., A Vision for You, and we're without a backup today, so we'll pray we have no glitches. Jody E. is our newcomer greeter, and Leslie M. will share announcements. The reference numbers for Wednesday, February 4th, 10 a.m. Eastern, is 23,184, and for Thursday, February 5th, 7 a.m. Eastern, the share ID is 23,186. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery, and I will now ask Michelle W.C. to please read the 12 steps of OA for us. Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, good morning. This is Michelle W.C. in California, the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle W.C. in California. I will now ask Joanne L. to please read the 12 traditions of OA for us. Good morning, Joanne.
Oh, good morning, Susan, and good morning to everybody, especially the newcomers. I am Joanne L. from Rhode Island. I'm recovered. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lease problems of money, property, and prestige. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Joanne. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we're going to resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter, There Is a Solution. Turn to page 18, the first paragraph, An Illness of This Sort, ending with Anyone Can Increase the List. I will now ask Vanessa G. to please start reading and share with us. Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, everyone who's on the meeting this morning. My name's Vanessa G., and I am a compulsive overeater recovered in New Mexico. And this is page 18, first paragraph. An illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness, for with it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. You know, when I picked up a Big Book for the first time, I kind of, you know, sort of spun through it, and, you know, being sort of a compulsive type, an obsessive type, I wanted to get to the meat of the problem, I guess, immediately. So I skipped over Doctor's Opinion and Bill's story. I thought, but when I came to There Is a Solution, my attention was grabbed. It started a complete hope, actually, in my life. And this list here that they put in this book, in this paragraph, is definitely about the disease. It's definitely about what has happened in my life as a result of suffering with, you know, the disease of compulsive eating. It is an alcoholic illness, and it did annihilate most of the things worthwhile in life for me. There's a part of a sentence on page 62 that says, the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Gosh, that was so true. When I look through this list, I never made the connection between my compulsive eating and when misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, and worked lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. How many of those things were due to my compulsive eating, to my disease? I couldn't see the true from the false. I thought, you know, those things were things that everybody experienced in those ways. And I didn't see that, you know, it was arising out of my illness. Probably because I thought that I could still control, that I could still be better, that I could still be a good person. You know, I wasn't a bad, you know, I thought of myself as a bad person trying to get good as opposed to an ill person trying to get well. This program has given me the opportunity to get well, to lose the idea that these things cannot be healed, that they are just facts of life. This list here has changed in my life. My relationships with all of these people that they list here and all of these ways that, you know, my relationships were annihilated, that's changed. I have, you know, beautiful relationships today, and particularly
that time.
People. And I'm really grateful for that. And thank you for letting me share this morning.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. All right. Before we start sharing, first of all, let me give you a couple of reminders. Most important, what we are speaking about this morning, and that is the first paragraph on page 18 in the chapter, There Is a Solution. Starting, can we stay muted right now? An illness,
anyone can increase the list.
Something's happened
with the sound.
Okay.
Okay.
Although we value your experience, please limit your sharing. Is someone unmuted? Okay. Start again. Although we value your experience, we ask that you please limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So if you would like to share this morning on this paragraph, and it's your third day, please could you give me your first name, last initial, and the state or country you are calling from this morning? Who would like to share?
Wendy B. in Arizona.
Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy. And who was that?
At Michelle WC, California.
Thank you, Michelle.
Carrie W., California.
Thank you, Carrie.
Bruce E., Florida.
Thank you, Bruce.
Avi V, Vancouver, Canada.
Thank you, Avi.
Nancy LJ, California.
Thank you, Nancy. All right, here's who I have for this first lineup. I have Wendy B, Michelle WC, Kerry W, Bruce E, Avi V, and Nancy LJ. So if everybody other than Wendy B. in Arizona could please mute their line, I'll turn it over to you, Wendy. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And the line where it says, with it there goes the annihilation of all the things that are worthwhile in life. It engulfs all those whose lives touch the sufferers. And it's just really common in our selfish thinking to think that we aren't hurting anyone else, you know, when we're acting in our disease, that we're only hurting ourselves. And that's denial, you know, that our disease wants us to believe. And this paragraph just describes so clearly the promises of, you know, the damage of our addictive behaviors, you know, the damages they'll cause. And it's a great description of the untreated alcoholic. And those misunderstandings, fierce resentments, financial insecurities, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. You know, and I can look at all this damage in relationships and see how it applied to my compulsive overeating days. And it's just a good reminder of the chaos that could return to my life, you know, if I stop working a program and let my disease take over again. You know, when the obsession runs my life, you know, it just slowly crowds out, you know, what actually all really matters in my life. And, you know, I would start avoiding people again and isolating. Eating opportunities would start running my schedule again. I had stopped being present for people and their issues, and I'd be self-absorbed. I'd be irritable and withdrawn. I would be focused on the food instead of on connecting and having honest sharing times with people. You know, and I'd use food as a pick-me-up instead of resting. And I'd hurt those who love me because I would be, you know, no longer be making healthy choices, and they would be sad, you know, watching me self-destruct. You know, and I'd be not as useful as a caregiver, you know, because I'd be uncomfortable in my body again and less able to be the hands and feet, you know, of those I serve. And this was just a good reading for me to really look at the cost of living in the disease, you know, and reinforce my commitment to live in recovery. And I just am so grateful for this program and the healthy life that I get to live now. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Wendy B. in Arizona. Next, we have Michelle W.C. in California. Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, good morning. Michelle W.C. in California. I love the title of this chapter, There is a Solution, and that just makes me smile when I read the chapter title. And, you know, as previous people were saying, this is such a good reminder of what it was like to be, you know, fully in the how it brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, and warped lives of blameless children, sad parents, sad wives. And I'm glad to be reminded of this today, because I have a disease of more is what I've learned. I thought I had a disease of, you know, just compulsive overeating, just thought I had a willpower problem initially a couple of years ago. And what I've discovered through, you know, being in the rooms of OA and working the steps is that I'm someone who's always just wants to be in a state of comfort. I like dopamine. I like kind of just feeling good. And what I've been learning now is that I am very selfish and dishonest, and that the only way I can get any true comfort is by turning to God. And I used to like to feel really full, like stuffed full of food. And I'm so grateful now that I have some food neutrality and that I'm able to, you know, be comfortable when I'm hungry, especially right before a meal. That's appropriate to be a little hungry before you eat your next meal. And so being comfortable with, you know, not being stuffed all the time was a big transition for me. And another word that stands out for me is cancer in this paragraph. I just lost my aunt, my beloved Aunt Sue, on Monday. And as I'm debating and working with my family, as we're trying to decide if I should travel to across the country for her funeral, I found myself, again, being very selfish and dishonest and wanting to, you know, ask God, like, God, you know, should I go? This is a big trip. It takes a lot of time, money, energy. And to be honest, I have another close friend that has leukemia, and I'm afraid she's going to die this year. And just, you know, how am I going to manage all these trips across the country to go to people I really deeply care about? And I'm grateful for the 10-step process and also doing some two-way prayer that God's like, you know what, it's going to be okay. And it's going to work out just fine. And, you know, I'm grateful at my job. I do get a little bit of bereavement leave, but it's definitely a challenge, like that, as you travel across the country, you need that little bit of extra time. And just, one of the things that really came out in that my discernment is just how selfish I am, because I'm like, I want to plan. Can you please tell me, God, if my friend's going to die this year? And it's, you know, I don't have the answers for that. And I'm grateful that I'm able to use 10 steps and be able to talk
That's
to
time.
Outreach calls. Thank you very much. Michelle WC in California.
Thank you, Michelle. Next, we are going to San Diego to Carrie W. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning, Susan. Carrie W. in California, in San Diego. What a relief. You know, this disease is so insidious. You know, it causes so much damage. And I beat myself up so much, thinking I just had low moral character or was just weak and, you know, all the shame that goes along with it. And then to realize, you know, that it's a disease like cancer was so freeing for me. You know, it just lifted all that to know that there's so many people that have the same disease, that I'm not alone, and that it's just so misunderstood because, you know, it's just, you don't see it like the cancer. I mean, you see all the wreckage, but it's hard. Sometimes people just don't believe that it's a disease. And I didn't understand really the allergy at first. And then, you know, after I looked up the definition of an abnormal reaction to a substance, then I realized, oh, yeah, I have an abnormal reaction. You know, I have something. And then I want to have more and more and more. And other people don't have that. And I do now believe that it's a disease. But I still don't think people fully understand it. So I try and stay private, you know, with my program unless someone needs help. Because people will look at me strange sometimes when they find out what I'm doing. But it does bring a lot of suffering, you know, to my life. And it has rippled out in my family and with my other half here. And, you know, it's been the last part of my spiritual growth, I think. I mean, maybe I'll just find other stuff to work on. I'm sure I will. But it seems to be the peace that has really freed me to have this beautiful connection with the higher power and to find serenity and peacefulness, and to be, to live, you know, a life aligned with something that's bigger than me. It creates a beautiful life and beautiful relationships with people. And I can walk through hard things with a lot of support. You know, I have a lot of support now and I have something hard to go through. So I guess now that I look back, I'm grateful that I have this disease, but I never thought I would say that. It's allowed me to grow into a much better person by working this program. So thanks for letting me share. Everybody have a great.
Thank you, Carrie W. in San Diego, California. Next, we have Bruce E. in Florida. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. I'm Bruce E. I'm in Southwest Florida, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Grateful for this day. I'm grateful to be on this line, grateful for you guys. I do have an illness. I mean, that, you know, I may not have admitted this some time back, but I do now. I've got a disease. I'm not, like I heard earlier, you know, I'm not a bad person trying to get better. I'm a sick person trying to get well. And I like that. I have worked I'm now working a disease model, meaning I adjust the alcoholic foods or do the alcoholic behaviors, and I trigger the allergy and the phenomena craving and the obsession compulsion. You know, it just happens that way. That's the disease. That's what the disease does. I've used other models. I've used the religious model and the psychological model. Those didn't work so well for me. But the disease model seems to make the most sense. yeah, this thing about the there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile. Well, when I'm in the food, my personality changes. I'm mad all the time. Who am I mad at? First of all, I'm mad at myself. You know, I'm really angry at myself for doing that, those things. But I can't stop. And so, and in turn, I get mad at the other people around me, my kids, my wife, and all of that kind of stuff, you know, all those people, you know. And I found out that doesn't work real well. I can't blame them. I can't blame God. That doesn't work well. It does touch everybody's life. You know, when I'm abstinent and I'm sober and I'm not so sick, I can think more clearly and I can see where I've harmed other people and I can do amends. Fierce resentment. It brings misunderstanding and fierce resentment. Sure does. Financial insecurity. Sure. Disgusted friends. Well, one thing I found is that I discuss this disease with others that have the disease, but I don't discuss it with people that don't have it. I've tried doing that and that doesn't work, you know, because they all told me to just, you know, eat moderately and be cool about it.
That's time.
Just limit myself. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Bruce E. in Florida. Next, we have RVV in Vancouver. Good morning, RV.
Good morning, Susan. Thank you for facilitating the meeting. This is RV, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Vancouver, British Columbia. Just that first line, an illness of this sort, we have come to believe it an illness, that when I finally believed that, and I think it's unfolding, but believed it, there was so much relief in that. There was so much freedom to know that there's no control here. Like, I absolutely cannot control this disease. And just the release of that, the weight that came off when I finally knew, I knew it with every fiber of my being, that it's an illness and I alone cannot fix this. And for so long, even in recovery, I thought, well, if I just do this and I just do that, and then I'll do that and it will be okay. And I don't need to understand it today anymore. I don't need to know why I'm a compulsive overeater. It just doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter. And again, it's like it's a paradox, right? That letting go, that belief and the powerlessness and the unmanageability, really fully and embracing step one. And it's something that I do every day. Every day I reaffirm my powerlessness and my unmanageability because there is so much freedom in that. And it's so true, right? And I love the words that are used, like annihilation, like that is such a strong word, but it's so true. When I take that first compulsive bite, nothing matters. Nothing matters, and I will run you over to get to that next bite. And it's that bite that, you know, that no amount of food can fill, that emptiness. And again, realizing that, really realizing that there's so much freedom in that, because it just lets go of that. It disabuses me of that idea that there's no point. Why even try to take that first bite? Because there's nothing that's going to fill that emptiness. Well, I take that first bite because I'm a compulsive overeater. And when I'm not in alignment with God, I'm in bondage to the food. There's no question. And we hear this. I've heard this a lot, that I'm either moving towards the disease, I'm moving towards the darkness, or I'm moving towards the light, I'm moving towards God, I'm moving towards recovery. And I think, like that line in our big book, right? God is either everything or God is nothing. What is the choice to be? So today I choose to move towards the light. I choose to live in alignment with God, and there is so much peace in that. Thank you, everyone, for this meeting, for letting me share. All right. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Avi. Perfect timing. Next. Can everyone mute? Thank you. Next, we have Nancy LJ in California.
Morning, Susan. Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Nothing too much different than the beautiful shares I've heard, but we have come to believe it an illness. I do know that to be true. However, when I'm not in a spiritual place, that sentence kind of disappears and I start coming into the shame and I'm a bad girl and I can't do it because I'm not strong. I'm not working a good enough program. I'm not a spiritual guru. You know, I start going there. And so I just kind of, you know, and where I'm at today is I just kind of accept and recognize those feelings when they come up, start coming up to the surface, and just bat them down with steps of this program, you know, and my sharing and my, you know, and 10 steps and readings and on and on. I just have to bat that. It comes back. It's like, oh, I'm bad. And I think, you know, I'm a medical professional, and even, you know, with other diseases like cancer mentioned in this book, there's still feelings of I'm bad. I have cancer. Yeah, it's complicated. I just wanted to share. I read one of the stories in the back of the book on page 553. It taught him to handle sobriety. And it just really was so good. I just want to share it, the third paragraph on 553. It's no great trick to stop drinking. The trick is to stay stopped. And also, AA does not teach us how to handle our drinking, he said. It teaches us how to handle sobriety. And that's my problem, is being sober, right? I got all these, you know, having God, my relationship with God. Sobriety is my problem, right? I can stuff it all down and not feel anything. Well, that's not really true. I'm going to feel something, but it's a lot of shame and self-hate. But yeah, this program teaches me how to handle sobriety, and I'm really, really grateful for that today. Super grateful. And that's all I got, and that I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy LJ in California. All right, a reminder where we are, page 18 in the chapter, There is a Solution. We are commenting on one paragraph today, an illness of this sort, ending with anyone can increase the list. So if today is your third day on either vision meeting, please feel free to star one, unmute, and give me your first name, last initial, and where you are calling from this morning. Okay, everyone take a breath. I heard an L. That's all
Nancy
I heard.
Nancy L.
Okay, Judy? Nancy, where are you? Hold on, Nancy
Arizona.
L, where are you calling
Arizona.
From?
Arizona.
Thank you. And who was that after Nancy?
Judy.
Paula Q.
Jody. And
Judy,
Jay, where are you? Judy. Okay, hold on a second, everyone. Judy, where are you calling from?
Petaluma, California.
Okay, thank you. All right, and who else?
Polly.
Michaela J.
I heard Polly and I heard Michaela. Great. Certain voices I know and I can recognize. Who else would like to join this lineup? All right.
Janice K.
All right. Janice, and Janice, where are you calling from?
Oregon.
Oregon, fantastic. All right, here's who I have, and we'll see where we end up time-wise after this group. I have Nancy L. in Arizona, Judy, I believe it's Judy I. in Petaluma, California, Polly K., I think Polly is in California, maybe I'm wrong. Yes, she's in Northern California, Michaela J. is in Canada, and Janice K. in Oregon. All right, could everybody other than Nancy L. in Arizona mute their line? And Nancy, I turn it over to you to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. And good morning, everyone. This is Nancy, recovered in Arizona, 100-pounder. Yes, at the age of 22, I had alienated myself from everything worthwhile. Because what did I give my life up to? My addiction. But I didn't think it was an addiction. It was just something that I did. I overate, and I ate a lot, and I ate a lot of sugar. So at the age of 22, I'm living with my mom, no job, no car, no friends. My life was just wasted. And I say, when I think about no car, why didn't I have a car? Because I was too lazy to put oil in it. I had a cute little Volkswagen Bug, and I loved it. And I'd driving down the road one day, and all of a sudden, I'm looking to my left, and I'm looking to my right, and all these parts are flying off the back in the engine. They're just flying to the left and to the right of the car. And, of course, the first thing I have to do is get bitter because now I don't have a car. Well, why? Because I couldn't put oil in it? Yeah, I couldn't think straight. I am so grateful for my recovery today. It's hard. Sometimes the days are really hard. But you know what? There is nothing like being recovered and having a higher power that I feel is with me every minute of the day, helping me to do the things I don't want to do, and which is, you know, working with others, taking others through the steps, just taking the time to help others. How awesome that is. And I used to think, I don't want to help anybody else. I'm the one that needs the help. Well, I sure did need help. And I'm grateful, so grateful for this program. This is Nancy claiming her seat. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Nancy Ellen out in Arizona. Next, we have Judy in Petaluma, California. Go ahead, Judy.
Good morning, everybody. This is Judy, recovering compulsive overeater. Thank you, Susan, for your service. This paragraph really spoke to me, and I've been writing on step one the last 2 weeks and really, really getting how powerless my life has been with my disease running the show. And I just become another person when I'm on sugar, and I do not care what I do, how I say it. You bug me, I'm going to let you know. And, you know, my disease wants to kill me. That's a given. So this last 2 weeks, really, really focusing on the big book and the steps and all the different books and podcasts and ways that people have been talking about step one, it's been so helpful to me to really get it into my noggin about how crazy this disease makes me and that I am so powerless. I cannot not pick up by myself. I need to be part of something other than me to help me just be sane. I don't know what my HP is yet, but I'm trusting that there's something out there that's not me that's been helping me so far. I've got like 24 days today, and I'm already feeling like a different person, and I'm so grateful, and just so grateful to be on this meeting with everybody, and that I have this program, you know, to help me a day at a time. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Judy. I am Petaluma, California. Next, we have Polly Kay in Northern California. Good morning, Polly.
Good morning, moderator. Thank you for your service. It's Polly Q, just to let you
Sorry.
Know. No worries. Thank you so much. So I can define what it is that I feel, how I'm taking everything when I'm in the food. And why I'm in the food. It's guilt, shame, blame, compare, deny game. That's what I call it. And I am triggered. Everything triggers that one way or the other. And so I'm going to need to eat and have always needed to eat as a result of that a lot of food because I'm a food addict. And I've been a food addict since I can remember, probably, I don't know, when I was born. And so I am a that's what I use to get out of that guilt, shame, blame, compare, deny game. Because when I was in that, I was the one that misunderstood everybody and everything. I had fierce resentment. I worried about financial insecurity obsessively. I was disgusted with friends and employers. And I blamed everybody for everything all the time. that was how I lived my life. Now, I didn't think that. I thought I was a victim. I thought that I you know, deserved better. You know, I came from an alcoholic home. You know, I was a hard worker. Why didn't everybody work as hard as I did? Why didn't everybody do what I told them to do if they would just behave? I mean, that's how it is for me as a food addict. I cannot be happy, joyous, and free if I am in the food. And in order to get through that, I have to be in the food so I can hide and pretend that I'm really okay. And as a result, you know, my relationships get warped. I become, I live in resentment all the time. And that is how it is for me as a food addict. That's how it was. That is why I had to find neutrality around food through this program. Thanks for that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Polly Q in Northern California. Next, we have Michaela J in Canada. Thank you, Michaela.
Good morning, everybody. Firstly, thank you, everybody, for giving service. And wow is all I can say to this meeting today. Such powerful, powerful shares. And God, spot on, absolutely spot on. You know, this illness, the malady, the obsession, the physical allergy, you know, it does destroy me and everyone around me. I seriously myself. Really not see for some time, you know, the damage that I'd cause other people. You know, I wasn't reliable. I was full of fear. I had mood swings, refusing to go out. You know, couldn't manage myself, but oh my God, I could manage you. Full of self-loathing, wrecked relationships. You know, my perceptions, my attitudes, everything were just completely off the scale. You know, and that misunderstanding, you know, people thinking, like, she's like Jekyll and Hyde. What's going on? One minute she wants to go out. The next minute she doesn't want to go out. She disappeared for a while and now all of a sudden she's canceling going out for dinner. Well, yeah, you know, I binged and I didn't want to go out because everybody could see I binged in my head. You know, and them thinking, you know, why can't she just stop? And it says, like, the annihilation of all things worthwhile. And that is such an incredible, powerful statement, as has already been said. And, you know, for me, I avoided so many things that were worthwhile in my life. You know, fear that people would notice that I'd gained weight or, you know, if I was doing purging at that time or... Yeah, the list goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, today I'm recovered. I have a daily reprieve contingent on me being, like, spiritually fit. I have to stay in 10, 11 or 12. Otherwise, I forget I have this illness. Thank you.
Thank you, Michaela. Next, we have Janice K. in Oregon. Good morning, Janice.
Hello, this is Janice Kay in Oregon. Like other people, I look at this and it's so easy to do a before and after. But for me, I also look at this and see the words misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, and I think, that's my before. That's when I didn't understand anything. When I didn't know how to be a person. That sounds odd, but I learned how to be a person in these rooms. All I learned in my early life was how not to be present. But... So I see that, and I see it's how I used to live. I thought the world was at fault, and then I used all kinds of character defects to cope what I had named here was self-doubt and self-hatred, which was a totally biased point of view in which I get to be responsible for the sins of the world. And it's all bad because I'm so awful. Well, I learned better. I did. In recovery, I can see how I contributed. I didn't do it all. I contributed substantially. And the words I see in recovery that stand out are warped lives of blameless children, sad spouses, and parents. Because I did not realize when I was teaching my very young children that I was teaching them how to be the end product of what I've heard termed generational trauma. I did not learn until much later in their lives. And now I get to do recovery in front of them. I get to show them. I think that perhaps I was able to help them become real people instead of the cardboard stand-up that I feel that I sometimes was. I learned how to live an intentional, aware, awake life. I'm not sleepwalking through it anymore. It's intentional. There are feelings, both good and bad, and keep coming back. It works. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Janice K. in Oregon. Okay, we have 2 minutes left. First voice I hear gets the last share. Who's holding out?
Hey, Jay.
Star one. Okay, so say your name again.
Courtney J., North
Courtney,
Carolina.
Courtney, go ahead. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm holding out, but I'm remembering I'm a slogan junkie, and one of the newest slogans I've heard is Star One is not an option, and that comes from somebody whose recovery I cherish and treasure. As far as the reading today, I'm reminded of another slogan from years ago that I'm happy to hold on to because they do stick with me and they help me out. And one is that illness begins with I and wellness begins with we. So we are reminded that this is not an I program, this is a we program. One of my issues right now is that I'm holding on to some emotional stuff and I'm having trouble doing step 10s. So I'm coming on the meeting to support this meeting because this is where the big book tells me what I need to do about that emotional buildup. I was a little bit of a, I used to have a lot of shame for this disease. So I'm, I don't know. I'm grateful for the big book to learn that it's an illness and that shame is not serving me. And I have a little bit of shame about my behavior yesterday. But they're changing today, and here I am, again, grateful for all the people who helped make this meeting possible and how this vision for you brought alive the big book as a design for living for me because I did not know how to live in my youth, in my, you know, teens and young years. I've been in the rooms for about 30 years now. Never left because I knew this was where the solution is. So keep coming back. Learn to share. That's what I'm trying to be better about.
That's time.
And thank you for this opportunity.
Thank
have
you
a great
so
day,
much,
everybody.
Courtney. Thank
okay,
you, Courtney
bye.
J. in North Carolina. Okie dokie. All right. Thank you, everybody who was of service today. Vanessa G., Shelley E., who's coming up. Stay on with Jody E. and Leslie M. Jody will help facilitate if you need a sponsor or you are an available sponsor. Thank you to Michelle W.C. and Joanne L. for reading. Okay, we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Shelley E., will you please read a vision for you for us? Thank you.
Absolutely. Good morning, my fellows. Thank you, Susan, for your service. I'm Shelley E., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater
in Arlington, Texas, the Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.